Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and the U.S. women's soccer team are world champions for the fourth time.
Go! U.S. leads!
That is the sound of team captain Megan Rapinoe scoring the game's first goal on a penalty kick in the 61st minute. Here to talk about the 2-0 win over the Netherlands and where the women's team goes from here is WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer. Hey, welcome back, Shira.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. So tell us first, what's your reaction to yesterday's game?
Shocked. No, not really.
I didn't think so.
I think we all expected the U.S. team to win, to beat the Netherlands. They were the heavy favorites, and they did what they needed to do. Though I actually was a little shocked that they didn't score in the first half. We had to wait until the second half for the U.S. to get on the scoreboard.
Was the suspense killing you?
Oh, it was killing me.
Yeah.
But, they, you know, listen, it was an impressive run. And I think one of the things that everybody is saying after this is a team that talked the talk and then walked the walk. I mean, there's probably no greater example of that. They came in as heavy favorites. They were the Goliath. And they came through.
So to that Goliath thing, we actually talked just at the start of the tournament about this kind of Goliath narrative that the team embraced.
Mm-hmm.
The women's team came into the World Cup with tons of expectations. But really, how hard is it actually to win back-to-back World Cup championships?
Incredibly hard. Now, I will say this. The parity in the women's game isn't the same as the parity in the men's game. I think you can reasonably say that the tournament is maybe four, five, six teams deep on a good day. I mean, you had sort of the cream of the crop being, you know, France and England, of course, you know, in addition to the U.S., the Netherlands. Those were some of the, you know, Germany was up there as well. Those were the teams people were watching out for. But I think if you went beyond four, five, or six teams, there really wasn't much competition for the U.S.
Yeah.
But listen, there were record hot temperatures in France throughout the tournament.
Really?
There
were really like exactly, 110, 112.
Exactly. Yes. Not in where the games and not in the cities where the games were being played, but still hot enough to make substitution patterns an issue and player fatigue an issue and hydration an issue. And of course, injury is always an issue. So you've got to balance that all. It's all out. It's tough to get through a month-long tournament and still be in top four. And the U.S. managed to do that under the weight of expectations.
So Megan Rapinoe was in top form. She won the Golden Boot Award for the most goals scored and the Golden Ball, which is sort of like MVP. And at the age of 34, she became the oldest player to score in a Women's World Cup final. But apart from some big names like Rapinoe, like co-captain Alex Morgan, who were some of the other players that you really thought shined and had an impact?
Well, I think there's one name that comes through, and that's Rose Lavelle. She scored the other goal in the final against the Netherlands. She is the future of the women's national team. She's 24. She's an incredibly creative player, and she is going to lead the next generation of players, you know, the 20-somethings. You know, Rapinoe, as you mentioned, is 34. She's part of the 30-something group, a group that, you know, out of which many players will be retiring and not in the next World Cup. Rose Lavelle is the leader of the future. But can we stay with Megan Rapinoe just a bit?
Because you stay with Megan Rapinoe.
Because I think, you know, we should not gloss over the fact that she was so outspoken. She took on President Trump midway through the tournament. She was this
about the visit to the White House.
Exactly, about the visit to the White House. She had all this pressure on her. And quite frankly, a lot of naysayers and haters coming out of the woodwork throughout the tournament, particularly when she took on Trump. And she sort of just brushed it all off. And when the pressure was at its highest, she came through. I mean, she scored critical goal after critical goal for this team. And not only that, she led them on and off the field and maintained her outspokenness and didn't let any of the pressure bother her. I mean, one of the all-time great pressure performances at the highest level.
Really, truly cool under pressure. Now, there was one other really interesting moment from yesterday I want to make sure we get to. It was at the end of the game where the crowd started an equal pay chant. Let's listen to that.
Equal pay! Equal pay! Equal pay!
Now, against the backdrop of this tournament, the women's team is suing their employer, the U.S. Soccer Federation, saying that they're paid less than the men's team. They receive less support despite really consistent success. So what is the status of that lawsuit?
Well, along with the celebration, the U.S. women's team gets to head to mediation. That's the next step. And I think the hope is they avoid a messy trial and sort of can resolve this in some equitable fashion and come to an agreement where there is equal pay. Personally, I think the women should get paid more. We are talking about the most successful women's team in the history of the sport and a men's team, quite frankly, that has done nothing.
But there are times when they get paid more. Is that correct?
Yes, but that only happens when they have the highest level of success possible. They have to win World Cup after World Cup after World Cup. You know, they have to win game after game in between the World Cup cycle, you know, during the, you know, in between World Cups to even come remotely close to earning what the men get.
And who have a much weaker record.
And not only that, you know, we are not even factoring in, I know this isn't part of, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation's purview, but club pay too. I mean, the men make much more than the women do in club game, in club
pay. So before we go, I want to shift gears for just a second because I am a big tennis fan. And it was really fun to watch 15-year-old tennis phenom Coco Gauff over the last several days at Wimbledon. Now, she lost today against Simona Halep in the fourth round, but she caught the attention of the world in round one by beating her idol, Venus Williams. How did she get so far so young, and are we going to see more from her in the future?
I'll answer the second question first, which is, of course, yes, we are definitely going to see more of her in the future. This is a future Grand Slam winner. I don't think there's any doubt, particularly if you saw her not in today's match, but over the weekend. She was down, she was almost out, and she came back, forced a third set, then won in the third set. So I think she has not only the physical skill, but the mental fortitude to be a superstar in women's tennis. So how did she get here? Well, it's interesting. I've been listening and reading some of what her parents have said, and they had a 10-year plan for her to win a Grand Slam. And she is 7 years into that 10-year plan.
Oh, man, so three more years to go.
Exactly.
All right, that's WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, stay with us, listeners. Coming up, what does summer camp mean to you and your family? We'll take your calls. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.